stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here with us today. An important day to be with us. A little history. Is that right?
What are you asking?
Spencer?
What?
A little history.
A little history? Yeah, this is one for the history books. This is a history book.
Hawes Spencer. Hawes, an award-winning investigative reporter, journalist, New York Times, NPR.
Sure, why not? Yeah,
I've all been true. There. Daily Beast.
Yeah.
A lot of people know Hawes from his work founding and reporting for and editing Siva Weekly, and then moving on to The Hook.
The late, great, dearly departed Hook.
That's right. But you can still find all those articles in the cloud, correct?
That is correct.
Look him up, teaching journalism at Virginia Commonwealth University and James Madison University, here with us today. Thanks for being here. We're going to discuss Hawes' book, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, Virginia.
USA.
Charlottesville, USA.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because we've moved beyond.
Yeah.
Once Charlottesville came out, Charlottesville expanded beyond Virginia.
Yeah, that's why I named it that.
Yeah, that's it, but it's it, and that first let me say that's clever.
Thank you. And creepy, right?
And creepy. And I mean, nobody wants to have their city titled with Summer of Hate.
No, they don't. The Chamber of Commerce was not a sponsor of this book.
But first sign my book.
All right. Signing away.
It
Rick
is
Moore, my hero.
Yeah, thank you. My mother will be proud. I don't know about your mother. It is. I'm curious as to the obviously the need was there, right? We talk about it in the beginning as it is a history book.
Yeah, it is. It is important to at least have a set of facts or a set of understandings, comments, but mostly facts about what happened in Charlottesville, so that future historians can work from a agreed upon starting place. You know, because when a story becomes national, and we've seen this with a lot of things, Pizzagate comes to mind, the Alex Jones InfoWars type of news organizations come to mind. There is misinformation, and so it was important to put together a compendium of what happened in Charlottesville. So that's what I did.
And the thing for many people listening today, it's the summer of hate. This book is not just about August 11th and August 12th. And one of the things that I found interesting, pick it up, open it up. You don't begin with.
Well, I began
tiki torches.
That's right. It's not told chronologically. It starts with a little bit about Charlottesville, and then it goes into what happened on 4th Street with the car hurtling into people and killing Heather Heyer and seriously injuring 35 others. And then it dials back actually a few years into a lot of the events leading up to that moment, including going back as far as Kristen Zekos at the book festival several years earlier, suggesting that maybe, just maybe, we should consider getting rid of Confederate monuments in Charlottesville.
You also talk about James Fields Jr. at a traffic stop in Ohio, correct?
Yeah, he was polite and respectful to the officer who cited him for something expired on his car. I think it was like an inspection sticker or something like that. And it just kind of set the tone for what was to come, even though it was of a very different tone. So there were elements in this kid's history that were in and of themselves not perhaps so scary as what ended up happening, but they should give people pause, because he did worship Nazi Germany. He had troubled his history teacher with his interest in Nazi Germany, which, you know, one can have an academic interest in Nazi Germany and an academic interest in Adolf Hitler, but his seemed to those around him to veer towards adulation. And there were things that he said that sent people's spines, like taking a high school tour of a Nazi death camp and saying, "This is where the magic happened." So he was giving off very, in retrospect, very creepy vibes about where his interests lay.
Again, our guest today, Hawes Spencer, discussing his book, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA. Hawes lived in Charlottesville 3 decades?
Yep. Anymore? Yep.
How do you take a book like this, a topic like this? You have a family here?
Yeah. 3 beautiful kids.
How do you take this topic and remain unbiased?
Pretty easy, actually. I mean, that's what I do. You mentioned at the outset, I teach journalism, and we teach it every day that you don't get too immersed in your story. When we have things happen in Charlottesville before this that tugged at people's hearts, like the murder of Morgan Harrington or the murder of Hannah Graham or the ABC attacks on UVA students, one, a young woman at Barracks Road Shopping Center, and then a more well-known one out at the corner on a kid named Martise Johnson. You report the facts, you report what people say, and you just don't fall in love with your own voice or your own or your sources. They're just sources, and we're here to be honest brokers of information and not to get involved.
Without getting too deep into class 101, how do you trim that off? I mean, it's one thing when you don't know those people, when you don't know the people who are involved in those stories. But in this, in the Summer of Hate, while you may not know the people who are, and we'll get a little further into each part of these stories, when you may not know the people who want the tarps up or down or whatever, but I would think that you were out there on August 11th or certainly on August 12th.
Yeah, I was there for all that.
And you, hundreds of people that you know, you had to see somebody with blood on their face that, or injured that you know, and screaming, or holding a sign or something.
I saw all kinds of people I knew, and I like the people that I report on for the most part, or I dislike them, or I'm neutral on them. But I like when people are doing things, and even if they're things that scare me. Like, I was so scared on August 12th. Well, let me dial it back. In July, when the KKK came to town, I was surprised to see my 2 oldest kids there in the crowd checking them out. And I actually thought that was cool. I thought that was civic engagement on their part. And I didn't know they were coming. and they're adult teens and able to make their own decisions. And I wasn't too worried, even when tear gas started getting fired. But on August 12th, there was so much hand-to-hand combat that I was scared, and I was glad that my kids did not come out for that.
Again, Hawes Spencer here. Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA. So let's talk about dates on the calendar a little bit. You brought up July 8th. That wasn't the first KKK visit, was it? Isn't there?
No.
Richard Spencer refers to KKK 1.0, 2.0,
right.
3.0.
Well, I don't think he would consider himself part of the KKK.
No, in his references,
yes,
during his talks.
That's right. So he came in May and showed up at Justice Park because that day, Lee Park, where the statue had been targeted for removal. And, you know, already I see news reports where people say that city council had voted to remove two statues, but that's mistaken. The city council had voted just to remove the Lee statue. And they knew when they made their vote that it was subject to state law that prohibits such moves in, according to some judicial precedents. But in other courts, the law is a little less certain. In any event, Spencer came to town in mid-May at Justice Park and put on a daytime rally. And I was actually a couple blocks away covering a debate between Tom Perriello and Ralph Northam, who were then seeking the Democratic nomination for governor, which Northam ultimately won and, as you know, became our governor. But I started getting rumblings and text messages from people saying that something was going on at the park, and I rushed over to Lee Park at that time. Actually, by that point, it was called Emancipation Park, even though it held the statue of Robert E. Lee. And now, as you know, it's called Market Street Park. Sometimes it's hard to keep all this stuff in order. But but I went over there, and the Festival of Cultures was going on. And so I was like, okay, I don't see anything. So I went back to Northam and Perriello at the Haven, that restored church on Market Street, and I missed personally the rally at Justice Park or Jackson Park or now Court Square Park, I think. Anyway, and then it wasn't until that night when the torches came out. That was the first time we'd seen the torches in Charlottesville, and Mike Signer was sufficiently troubled by that, he being our mayor, to give interviews and send out tweets indicating that the torch imagery was frightening to anyone with an awareness of history and the use of fire to intimidate, and that he found such imagery to be reminiscent of the KKK, and it sent shockwaves. There were news reports all over America about this torch rally in Charlottesville, and so that.
Hopefully. So there's 1.0.
That was Charlottesville 1.0, according to Richard Spencer, the man credited with popularizing the term alt-right and the head of a group called the National Policy Institute. Richard Spencer, for those who may not be familiar with the name, is no relation to me, I hope, or I believe. And got to keep my independence, right? I neither embrace nor revile. And then He sort of shot to some level of infamy after the election of Donald Trump, when at his annual convention in D.C. in the Reagan building, he said something like, "Hail Trump, hail victory," and some people in his crowd put up the, that angled arm that looks like a Nazi salute, or some call it a Roman salute, and that video made waves and put Richard Spencer on a lot of people's radar as someone whose supposedly jocular treatment of intolerance was scary, to put it bluntly.
So then the actual KKK comes to Charlottesville in July.
That's right.
And many people would say that their visit isn't handled very well by the police.
Right. So what happened was, after that very short KKK rally took place in Justice Park / Jackson Park / Court Square Park, a lot of the people who were participating in shouting it down walked toward the KKK people who had been escorted to a locked parking garage that the police use near the courts complex north of High Street, and a face-off ensued on High Street, at which time several tear gas canisters were fired by the police in an effort to disperse the crowd. And the complaint came that it wasn't needed, that there wasn't any imminent threat that would have justified using tear gas, pepper spray.
So possibly overdoing their needs.
Yeah, and also, as the city's after action report, which we call the Hafey report, because Tim Hafey, the former prosecutor turned private lawyer, although now he's actually just moved on, I don't know if you heard, to be the UVA counsel, University of Virginia counsel. But at this time, he was with Hunton and Williams, and he oversaw the creation of a lengthy, approximately 200-page report about the city's actions in all these cases. And you may recall that the city first alleged that the protesters fired some sort of a pepper gel or pepper spray, and that was the justification for the officers firing theirs. Well, as it turned out, there was no evidence of any caustic or other irritating materials sent out by the protesters. And so that was like the first strike for our police chief, Al Thomas. And some believe that the rebuke that he was getting from the activists would eventually color his decision to take a more hands-off approach in Charlottesville on August 12th.
Spencer here. Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA, talking about the activities in Charlottesville of 2017. Didn't just lead up to August 11th and 12th, but also going afterwards. Talking about July 8th, there was a lot of issue. Also, the people felt that the police literally just formed sort of a barricade allowing the KKK from the parking garage to the park and back.
Well, they did. They did. That was an explicit effort on the part of the Charlottesville police to enable a free speech activity to occur. There were, at the same time, conscientious objectors here in Charlottesville who decided to try to block passage of the KKK into the park, and they put their bodies on the line, and over a dozen of them, I believe, ended up getting arrested for so doing.
Before we move on to the next day, let's talk about a few of the people that you list in the book. You mentioned Mayor Mike Signer. You discuss the options for him of being a strong mayor, or these are the two types that are out there,
right? So
in our government,
yeah, in American city government, we have two systems by and large. We have a strong mayor form of government in which the mayor is elected by the people and gets to pick all the department heads and basically runs the city, kind of like a benevolent dictatorship, hopefully. And then we have the council manager form of government, which Charlottesville has, which is designed to be more like a business, where the city council acts like a board of trustees. They pick their city manager, and the city manager runs it like a CEO. And so what Mike Signer was doing was kind of an interesting hybrid, where he was a weak mayor in the city manager form of government. I'm not saying that to rag on him, but that's the way the city manager form of government is set up. so that the mayor is just another member of city council. But he also, as a Princeton-educated author, had a desire to be the top communicator with the citizens. And he really tried to insert himself in some things, like calling Charlottesville a capital of the resistance and trying to be there at the command center for the law enforcement officers on August 12th, and those plans went horribly awry.
Right, and you said they wouldn't let him in.
They wouldn't let him in.
20 minutes after the hour with Hawes Spencer, investigative journalist, teacher,
sure,
author, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA. Hang tight. Lots more to talk about before you go purchase your copy of the book. All right, we gave you just enough time to stretch your fingers.
That's it. Yeah, we were talking about the council manager or weak mayor form of government which Charlottesville has versus the strong mayor form of government that an older city in America used to have before the reformers thought that council manager was a little bit more professional. So in Charlottesville, we had Mike Signer as this weak mayor. Again, it's not a reference to his skill set or anything. It's just the type of government we have. But he was trying to give us some elements of strong mayor former government, and it backfired for him because he was shut out of the command center on August 12th, and he was very upset about it. And he began leaking information to the media about his discontent with the police chief who barred him from the command center and with his city manager, Maurice Jones, who had taken a family vacation in the days leading up to August 12th. Signer, you may recall, had sent a memo out saying something like it was time to be all hands on deck. And he seemed perturbed that the city manager had left town for a family vacation. The city manager later fired back and said that even though he was on vacation, he was well on top of the situation. But remember, there was a last-minute legal fight going on where the city had pushed the Unite the Right rally out of the little downtown park we call Lee Park or Emancipation Park or Market Street Park and said, no, it must occur at McIntyre Park, a much larger park at 130 acres versus Lee Park's 1 acre.
Right, that happened on Friday, August 11th in the afternoon, correct?
Yeah, it was Friday. The arguments were made before a federal judge on Friday afternoon. We were all sitting in that courtroom, and the judge was kind of saying some things that hinted while we were there that afternoon that the city looked like it was more in favor of certain speech than the Unite the Right speech, because what happened was, and this maybe is just historical accident, when the Unite the Right rally initially got its permit to rally at Lee Park, a UVA professor a left-wing professor had reserved a couple of other parks to kind of stage peaceful counter-protests and sort of refresh people and have some counter-programming. Well, the city approved those applications and left them approved, whereas it approved the Unite the Right application and then rejected it. Confused? It's a lot to take in, right?
Well, it's, I mean, let's face it, we're talking about a whole summer here.
A whole summer.
In one book, and we're trimming that down to 1 hour. Again, with Hawes Spencer.
So anyway, I wanted to just, if I could, just say that the judge ended up ruling that night that the city had practiced what you're not supposed to do in the United States under the First Amendment, which was content-based discrimination. We will approve the left-wingers, but we will reject the right-wingers. And so the judge ordered the city, he approved an injunction ordering the city to let Unite the Right rally at Lee Park as planned, as approved. Original option, boom. And so the stage was set for a historic confrontation.
He didn't give them the option of saying, you move them all out to McIntyre Park and have their little tent party over there, or?
The plaintiff was Jason Kessler, the organizer of Unite the Right, and he was represented by the ACLU and the Rutherford Institute, two First Amendment human rights law firms, nonprofit organizations. And what they were seeking was to rally at Lee Park. I'm gonna go ahead and keep calling it Lee Park because it kind of will reinforce in listeners' minds the idea that that's where the Lee statue is, and it's also monosyllabic, so why not? And so that's what they wanted. They said that they were there to protest the statue removal, and that's why the judge ruled the way he did.
And we'll come back to the ACLU representation a little bit later in the hour. I think that's a key issue to talk about as well. We were talking about Mayor Mike Signer. So after August 12th, he also has some issues to deal with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had some big issues to deal with because, like I was saying, as a weak mayor, he had sort of acted like a strong mayor. He had criticized the police chief. He had criticized the city manager. And he had tried to insert himself in the command center. And let's face it, you know, he a target was drawn on his back, perhaps, by himself months earlier when he was responding to the announcement of the travel ban by President Donald Trump. Remember, in the very first days of the new Trump administration, Donald Trump followed through on one of his campaign themes to ban travel to certain Mideastern countries that were predominantly Muslim on the allegation that they were safety issues from allowing unfettered or widespread travel between our nations and those nations. And there was consternation all over America, but in Charlottesville, we had something special. We had Khizr Khan, and you may recall Khizr Khan sort of rocked the nation during the run-up to the election when at the Democratic National Convention, he famously held up a copy of the United States Constitution and said, "Mr. Trump, have you even read the Constitution?" And of course, what made his words so poignant was the fact that he was standing in front of a nationally televised audience, directly addressing the president, and he was the parent of a young man who gave his life for America fighting the war in Iraq. He was Humayun Khan, who had studied and done ROTC at the University of Virginia and ended up dying for America. And he his legacy was one that his parents picked up and used to inspire a lot of Americans who were upset that Trump seemed to be abridging some of the freedoms that we as a people cherish.
Let's talk about some other people in the book. Briefly talk about Bob Fenwick and his role and what.
Yeah, Bob Fenwick. I have a great long history with Bob Fenwick. I mean, you may recall he used to be like the, along with Dave Norris, one of the few city councilors who challenged the sort of weird powers that came together to build hundreds of millions of dollars worth of water infrastructure where tens of millions of dollars of water infrastructure might have sufficed. And he had some standing to make these claims because he was a former Army Corps of Engineers engineer guy, and he's now a home builder, and then he became a city councilor. So Bob Fenwick is a guy who's just not afraid to just find his own path. And in this case, he waited until the issue had become just white hot on what to do with the statues, and he thus became the swing vote because two city councilors. We have a five-person city council. Two had said, we're in favor of moving the statue of Lee. And the other two said, we're in favor of not moving the statue of Lee. And so Bob Fenwick was out there saying, I haven't decided. I want to hear from the public and hear from my constituents and all that. And he ended up in the spring of 2017 finally casting his vote in favor of moving Lee. And that became pretty much the shot heard across the state. Charlottesville was going to move a statue of Robert E. Lee. It was a big deal.
West Bellamy?
Well, West Bellamy, you know, is he's an educator. He actually earned his PhD in education just a few days before the Unite the Right rally. And Wes, of course, picked up a baton from a kid, interestingly enough, I'm speaking metaphorically. A Charlottesville High School student named Ziana Bryant had put forth a change.org petition to remove the statues, and that had gotten some traction among activists, but it wasn't until Wes Bellamy made that his issue and said, I think we really should move the statue. And Wes Bellamy's an African-American man. He's younger than most city councilors. He's a high vote getter, and he made it his issue, and it put him on the radar for Jason Kessler, the guy who ultimately put together the Unite the Right rally. And Jason Kessler came to our attention because he discovered that when Wes was a bit younger, before he joined city council, he had sent out some pretty questionable tweets. He's a guy who tweeted like 45 times a day, and just some of his tweets and retweets said things that seemed to endorse rape or criticize white people or criticize women. I mean, there were some out there tweets, and those tweets were concerning enough that the governor accepted his resignation on the State Board of Education, and he ultimately lost his job as an instructor, as a teacher at Albemarle High School, where he was teaching computer science.
Again, our guest today, Haas Spencer, as we're talking about his book, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, Virginia, in touch with August 11th and 12th and all the lead-ups and follow-forths and regards. Wes Bellamy, certainly a focal person with August 11th and 12th, because after Mayor Mike Signer sort of falls down, for many people, Wes Bellamy stands up. I mean, yeah, he gets things thrown at him if you're against what he stands for, but for many people, he literally does stand up and gives a Black Power salute in a meeting, and many people cheer, and other people are unhappy with that, but
yeah,
he takes over in city council for a lot of people. He's the one who gets people to calm down.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the competing kinds of leadership, and Mike Signer had tried to lead a certain way, and Wes Bellamy is leading a very different way, and maybe Wes Bellamy has more standing to some people in the community who view him as speaking for the common man, the disenfranchised, and you know, the people in, there's so many people in this area who can directly trace that they were owned by other people who lived in this area. And we're talking about slavery here, and it's something that supposedly ended 150 years ago or whatever, I guess more than that. But it's like it's just happened yesterday, because some of the effects are still with us. The wealth that white people have accumulated in America and in Virginia from owning other human beings.
Let's get it to August 11th and 12th specifically now. Is there a particular image that stands up to you that you saw, not that you talked about, heard about, but that you saw on one of those 2 days?
You know, I saw the torch rally at UVA, and I couldn't even really believe my ears when I heard him saying, "You will not replace us." You know, it sounded angry and it sounded a little antagonistic, but you know, I didn't really think that much of it. But then I heard it morph into, "Jews will not replace us," and I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I really could not believe my ears. In fact, when I Facebook posted some pictures that night, I didn't even believe that they were saying Jews. I wrote Jew singular because I thought maybe it was just like a few random guys morphing their chant. But then I replayed my tapes days later, and I could clearly hear these guys not only saying that, but making what they claimed were jokes about the Holocaust, which, you know, maybe if you're at a nightclub and maybe if you're Jewish and maybe if you dial the calendar back 25 years, you could get away with that. But that's just not an arena that most civilized Americans think is an appropriate subject for joking. And that was another thing I learned in putting this book together, was this process of what's called trolling, which I had never heard of before, and how trolling allows the troll to have it both ways. You say something really obnoxious in an effort to sort of unsettle your ideological opponents, and if they freak out, you get to lean back and say, "Well, I triggered them. I'm so smart." And if they freak out and try to punish you, you say, "Oh, well, I was just joking." So you get to have it both ways. You get to say your obnoxious thing, and you get to claim that it's all in good humor. But I'm not sure people are very amused.
Some of the things that I learn in reading Summer of Hate, Charlotte Hill, USA, it seems as though UVA knew ahead of time that the folks with the tiki torches were coming. Maybe not exactly how it was going to play out, but they knew that they were coming. Somebody called them and told them that those guys were in the Walmart parking lot.
Well, it's even more direct than that. They were in communications with UVA police, and they said, "We're going to march from Nameless Field to the Jefferson statue in front of the rotunda." And the UVA police claimed that they thought that meant a direct line, which is right there along University Avenue, Ivy Road, 250, whatever you want to call it in that stretch, and that was just going to be a simple, you know, few hundred yard walk. Well, as it turned out, they walked all the way to the foot of the lawn in and amongst, you know, in between buildings with those torches, which in retrospect, it seems that UVA could have regulated under an open burning policy, but they claim they didn't know that they were going to take that path. And I can't get to the bottom of that.
Let's take a break now, because I want to come back. I want to talk more about August 11th with Hawes Spencer and his book, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA. Hang tight. All right, we're back with Hawes Spencer. Hawes, how long did it take you to write the book?
I was supposed to start around Christmas, but I was sort of sick until late January of, was it this year? Yeah, this year. All turned around. Yeah, so I wrote it from like late January to early May, and they turned it around pretty quickly in terms of the editing process. But I'm pleased that basically the book I submitted is the book that the UVA Press published. So,
and you can find it?
In fine bookstores everywhere, Rick. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Good to
know. It's funny. It's not like a big bestseller, but it seems like it sells some copies every day because it is of an accessible one volume history of Charlottesville, USA.
So back to August 11th. So the university knew that these people were coming. The other thing that I found interesting was, and I didn't know this at the time, and I would probably you did, that sometime over the summer there's this documentary and that there's somebody either on the bus with them or following them who was...
Are you thinking about the October return by Richard Spencer?
No. Wasn't there a National Geographic video?
Katie Couric was in town.
No, there's somebody else. Maybe it was Katie Couric. I don't remember. I just remember thinking, who was with them that wasn't completely an alt-right?
There were lots of people sort of with them. If you think of... There are little news organizations that go around to all these ideological battles. And the one that comes immediately to mind is a guy named Ford Fisher, who has a web channel called News to Share. And he had some of the best footage from August 11th and August 12th. And actually, I don't know if you know this, but a new documentary just came out and is, I think it's like playing... It's playing in a few days on PBS, or at least on the local PBS stations, because it was made by the local PBS station, WCVE, out of Richmond, and it's really good. I saw it premiere at the Virginia Film Festival a couple weeks ago, and they relied to some large extent on Ford Fisher's footage. But he's a guy who kind of wears like a... I don't know if it's a GoPro or what. I think it is. And just goes to these ideological battles all over America. He's just all over America. And there's other guys like him. And that's why when things happened in Charlottesville, you would see like four different views of it, because there are these sort of professional documentarians who are out there just taping stuff all the time.
And UVA makes their choice on how to handle this. And so the gentlemen, I don't know why I choose that word. So these guys, these people take the path that they do. And as you mentioned a few moments ago, they could have handled it differently with their open light, with their open flame policy.
Right. Possibly.
Talk about that. Because then they go back in time, they go back later in time, they changed their policy.
Yeah, so the UVA tightens up their open flame policy, and they tightened up their facility rental or usage policy. I shouldn't say rental, sorry. Usage, where they impose really remarkable new restrictions on who can use UVA facilities. And the UVA lawn, that amazing expanse of grass between the rotunda and Old Cabell Hall, is now classified for UVA's purposes as a facility. And as such, you have different tiers of permission to use it. And people who are part of the university have certain things that they have to do to use it. And people who are not part of the university have much more restrictive policies in place, where they are supposed to reserve it a certain number of days in advance. And they must be limited to a certain small number of people. And so, you know, one of the outgrowths of what happened in Charlottesville is that we've given up a lot of the freedom that we used to take for granted to show up on the lawn and proselytize, which, you know, maybe some people think that's a good thing, but from a First Amendment perspective, it's definitely not something that's going to be universally admired.
You talk about the First Amendment, so let's throw in the ACLU piece here. Waldo Jaquith, local Charlottesville, well-known for many reasons, leaves the ACLU board, correct? Shortly after August 12th, I think he says so because... and I'm not going to quote this in any way, but he does so. It's okay to support First Amendment speech, but not First Amendment violence, something along that lines. Can you?
Yeah, I mean, look, he quit the ACLU of Virginia's board after August 12th, said that he wouldn't be used as a fig leaf for Nazis. I don't know how he missed the fact that the ACLU was fighting for the Unite the Right rally. Maybe he was surprised by what it turned out to be, and that people actually, in a couple of cases, were carrying Nazi flags. Maybe he thought it was just going to be right-wingers of a more benign variety. But in fact, as I mentioned a minute ago, there were Nazi flags. There was a guy wearing a T-shirt of Hitler. There were flags from Kekistan, an imaginary nation, which is part of that whole trolling idea where they grab imagery from Nazi flags and create a new flag for a non-existent nation. Like, what does that mean exactly? Oh, we're just joking. You're so humorless if you point that out to them. And then there was like this other group that like uses an image that's not really a swastika, but it's supposedly like the 21st century version of a swastika. But my head starts swimming at all this stuff. Like, I had never heard of any of these people before August 12th. I didn't know who Richard Spencer was. I didn't know who Matthew Heimbach was. I didn't know who Christopher Cantwell was. These are all these like right-wing names who were slated to speak on August 12th, and they never got their chance because the whole thing turned into mayhem and was declared an unlawful assembly before it even began.
So when we get to August 12th, you had an interesting quote from someone who's now, I'm not going to be able to find it. This is from a citizen. I don't know that it's named, and it's actually pre-August 12th. This whole thing feels like prep to a Wild West shootout where the businesses shutter and the women shoo their children upstairs.
Yeah.
And
That was a quote I recycled from an article that I worked on with the New York Times, where we were just sort of setting the stage for what was going to happen in Charlottesville. And I think what was interesting about that was, even then, that person ascertained that there was a lot of police. I mean, we did have hundreds of state police and Charlottesville police and other jurisdictions coming together, but it apparently it wasn't enough, or it wasn't deployed correctly. I think if you look at the HAFI report, the after action report the city commissioned, the police were trapped behind barricades and they weren't interacting with combatants. And I mentioned earlier how glad I was that my kids didn't show up, and that's true, because I was scared for my life on August 12th. I saw so much hatred in the streets and people wielding bats and poles and spraying each other with caustic chemicals and hurling water bottles and rocks and pieces of brick and urine and ink and paint, and I didn't know what was going to happen. So when the worst did happen, a car driving into people, I guess I was surprised, but I wasn't completely surprised.
Well, that's the worst thing that happened.
Yeah.
That and the helicopter crashing.
Yeah.
For many people, they ask, why did it take that long for the police to arrest somebody, to finally do something? So I ask that to you.
Yeah. I think, if you look at the HAFI report, you'll find that the Charlottesville police and the Virginia State Police, the two main forces coming together, they were working, first of all, with different operational plans. And secondly, they switched the sides of the park where the general public was going to be allowed versus where the Unite the Right organizers were going to be allowed at the last minute, and didn't tell everyone. So then they made no provision for moving the Unite the Right ralliers from their external locations into the park. There was no sort of police presence along the way. Now, the police fired back and said, well, the Unite the Right people made the last-minute decision to walk in on their own because they wanted to. They wanted to come in with their people. And that may have been true as well. And then the left wing were attacking the right wing with pepper sprays in their face. Several right-wingers like Christopher Cantwell and Baked Alaska and Richard Spencer were shot in the eyes with sprays for being who they were. And so it was utter mayhem, and left-wingers were throwing things and right-wingers were throwing them back. And so it was sometime after 11 a.m. when an emergency was declared, and it took a while to extract undercover officers from the crowd, supposedly. And then at around, I guess it was like 11:30, I'm not looking at my timeline right now, so I may be off by a few minutes, but police began walking around with a bullhorn saying, this event has been declared an unlawful assembly. If you do not leave now, you're subject to arrest. But all the while, people had been fighting. And you may remember from the Hafey report as well, there was an allegation that the police chief had said, let them fight. It'll make it easier to declare an unlawful assembly sooner. And as you may recall, it was just a matter of weeks. It was actually just a matter of days after the release of the Hafey report that Chief Al Thomas resigned and left his long career in law enforcement to retirement.
53 minutes after the hour with our guest Hawes Spencer talking about his book Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA. If you live in Charlottesville, live in the surrounding areas, have any knowledge or interest of the events, you really need to pick up the book because it's a historical gathering of everything that happened leading up to and in many cases what followed afterwards. We have to talk about James Fields Jr. and Heather Heyer.
Yeah.
Some people said that he didn't do that. That damage was to his car beforehand. The videos don't show the true facts. Obviously, they're one-sided on what happened. Talk about that.
Well, one of the nice things about living in Charlottesville is that when people say things like, well, when crazy conspiracy theorists say something like, the guy who shot the video of the car hurtling down the street, 4th Street, into Heather and the other protesters, that guy was like a crisis actor. No, he's like a local musician who thousands of people in Charlottesville know. And he happened to be there and captured this video and posted it. And he is who he says he is. And so I didn't even have to like get proprietary pictures or videos. There's so much video out there from so many perspectives, even from like Heather Heyer's good friend, Marissa Blair, was shooting video in the moments before. And you can kind of triangulate all these videos and you can see that they're showing the same thing. And you can look at pictures from Ryan Kelly, the Daily Progress photographer who ultimately won a Pulitzer Prize for his photographs of that incident. And you can see from his pictures that the car didn't have any damage before it hurtled down the street. And you can see that, yeah, some guy swatted at the car when it was flying down the street, but he didn't appear to connect with it, and he certainly didn't inflict any damage on the car until such time as it hit those people. And then you do see in the videos, you do see Antifa or protesters from the left approaching the vehicle and smashing out its back window. But you gotta remember that happened after the damage was done, after Heather Heyer had been struck and fatally injured.
You also talk about Charlottesville poor traffic management and the sawhorse at that intersection that day.
Yeah, so a police officer was assigned to guard that intersection and keep people from driving down. And that officer had radioed that she was in fear for her safety, and she was allowed to leave that post and leave it with just a sawhorse, a plastic sawhorse, like 5 feet wide. Well, that's a street where you didn't even have to move the sawhorse to drive around that sawhorse. And so not only did James Alex Fields Jr. drive down that street, but several vehicles before him did likewise. And what happened was they got sort of trapped there where Heather Heyer was struck. They couldn't get out of there. Two were stopped right in the travel lanes. One was a big black Ford Tundra pickup truck, which had pulled over to the side. And if you look at videos, this is all remarkably consistent. And we watched videos in court that the public hasn't seen, which add additional bits of information to the knowledge. And we're going to see more a couple weeks from now when James Alex Fields Jr. goes on trial for murder.
Just a couple minutes left here with Hawes Spencer talking about his book, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA. The president, Donald Trump, comes out just shortly after this all happens and says, unhappy about the violence on many sides.
Yeah, so what's interesting to me about that is he simultaneously lost so many Americans with that statement while gaining Americans with that statement, because he's like the only leading politician to acknowledge that there was left-wing violence and lots of it that day. But at the same time, as the commander of the country, the leader, the man with the bully pulpit, he's expected to unify the country and to denounce those voices of intolerance, which he didn't seem to do when he first spoke about Charlottesville. He seemed to equivocate and say that the two sides were on par. And he lost a lot of people at that moment.
Just our last 30 seconds. Would you agree that Charlottesville has become, I mean, it's not just a city now, it's sort of a metaphor. It's a moment in time.
It is. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who go to a really nice college in Ohio called Kent State. But for a lot of people, Kent State means four dead students protesting the war in Vietnam.
Well, Spencer, thank you for coming in and talking about your book, Summer of Hate, Charlottesville, USA.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
I hope you do not have to write anything else about this.
Me too.
Everyone have a lovely day. Listen to the podcast. If you didn't catch the whole thing, pick up the book at your bookstore.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.